Now, to a story of the St. Louis of just over a century ago. It centers on a Catholic priest, a home for poor boys, and a mysterious benefactor who made certain that the young men had the feast of their lives on Thanksgiving. The priest was Father Peter Joseph Dunn, that is. The home was the old Newsboys' home, and the benefactor, well, let's let Andy Hahn, executive director of the Campbell Museum, tell us all about that. Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, let's talk about that priest, Father Dunn. Who was he?
He was a Catholic priest. He was born in Chicago, and he came to St. Louis as a young man in his early 20s. And when he arrived here, he found a job as the night watchman at the new St. Louis University at Grand and Lindell. It was a brand new building, a big building to patrol. And according to his own story, Father Dunn tells how they made him a good Catholic. And very soon after that, he sought out the priesthood, was ordained a priest as a young man. And very early into his priesthood, he saw a need in St. Louis for young boys and the caring of young boys who wandered the streets. Sometimes they were called boot blacks, shining shoes, or the newsboys, because that was their chief occupation, selling newspapers on the street corners and the streetcars. So,
were there a lot of them?
By some accounts, there were many hundreds and maybe even as many as 1,000. These were orphan boys of all types, and it was a plight that was close to Father Dunn's heart, because he himself was orphaned, not as a very young child, but I think he was 13 or 14 when he himself was orphaned. And he saw a need. He actually saw that orphan girls were better cared for than boys. Boys were often just left to roam the streets, and he saw a great need made it his vocation of his life to look after them.
And the girls were sent to orphanages?
Were more girls' orphanages in St. Louis. There were really no orphanages for boys, where boys were welcome. And this would be in the early 20th century, about 1905. So girls were, in his words, better cared after than boys. And so he wanted to help those boys.
So how did he go about doing that?
Well, he started an orphanage in 1906 on a street called Selby Place. It was an old house. It was just a little northwest of downtown St. Louis. He rented this house and welcomed in some boys. He didn't have a lot of resources. He had a little money from the Archdiocese to help him get started. And one day while he was out, there was a knock on the door, and the kind of person helping Father Dunn cook the meals and look after the boys answered the door. And this gentleman asked the cook, is there much food for the boys? And according to Father Dunn's own autobiography, he said, there's 2 donuts and 1/2 loaf of bread currently in the pantry. So the gentleman said, thank you. And an hour later, 2 wagon loads of provisions arrived at the door, which, according to Father Dunn, lasted the many months of food for the boys.
How many boys might have been at the home at this time?
Well, at that first home, there was about 30. But the need was great. And Father Dunn, in very short succession, moved to 2 buildings. And finally, in about 1908, moved to a new building, which still stands at 3010 Washington Avenue, a brand new orphanage that could accommodate more than 100 boys with room to grow. And grow they did, because by the time Father Dunn died in 1939, he had sheltered about 7,000 boys in his home over a 30-year period.
This lasted until, I think, it was 1931, did I read?
Well, the dinners lasted till 1931.
Okay, all right.
Father Dunn lived until 1939, and the Newsboys' home actually lasted until 2006 in a number of incarnations before it was folded into another a children's services organization.
So let's go back to, I guess, 1906. Father Dunn was caught by surprise by this benefactor.
He was.
When did he get to know who this person was and that it was going to be sustained for a period of time?
Well, that's a good question. What we do know is that in that first year, when he brought that first wagon, he told Father Dunn that he wanted to be anonymous. He didn't want anyone to know who he was or that he was doing this. He said, if you need to refer to me, you can call me Mr. Murphy. And so over the years, the donations got bigger as the need got bigger. This mysterious benefactor helped build that orphanage at 3010 Washington, and of course, most famously supplied these magnificent dinners, these Thanksgiving dinners, which was an annual tradition for more than 25 years.
I assume Father Dunn did know his actual identity.
I think he did, right. But was asked to keep it a secret. And at the Campbell House today, we still have Hugh Campbell's checkbooks. And, you know, there's checks every month. Sometimes it's only $100. Sometimes it's $1,000. And this is in 1910, 1915, and these were substantial amounts of money.
$1,000 in those days, many, many, many times.
Exactly.
Well, you just gave it away. You called him Mr. Campbell.
I did. Sometimes
the
mystery
is solved.
Sometimes they call him the Prince of Mystery. Usually the newspapers quote the boys, the newsboys themselves are calling him that feller, because not only was he interested in providing for the boys, but he was interested in them personally. And the stories describe how he would visit. He liked to be there for that Thanksgiving dinner to see kind of the wonder on the boys' eyes as the they were brought into the dining hall and it was set. This was not just food. It was a production. It was a catered dinner. There was white tablecloths on the tables. There was fresh flowers. There was music. A band was brought in to entertain the boys. And the food was spectacular.
What would the age range of these boys have been?
From very young boys, you know, 4 or 5 years old on up. And
teenagers, late teens, that's
exactly
sort of thing.
Now, the younger boys were, you know, sheltered in the home and they were expected to go to school. To go to church, of course. And then as they became teenagers, it was expected that they would go out and get a job to help cover the cost of their board and their care.
Do we have any record of what their reaction to this that feller was? I mean, anything written or any stories passed down about their reaction?
There is. You know, these were boys who came from circumstances where they were lucky to get anything special at all in their life, the very basics. And to paint the scene of these dinners, there would be hundreds of pounds of turkey. Every boy at his place, they usually describe it in the newspaper accounts as a mountain of surprises and treats. So in addition to the, you know, turkey and corn and peas and rolls and things of that nature, every boy had something at his plate when he sat down. It was usually a pound box of candy, usually from Busy Bee Candy Company. It was oranges, apples, bananas, grapes, figs, and a fresh yellow chrysanthemum. And they often describe the chrysanthemum as the biggest flower any of the boys had ever seen, and even a dollar bill. So something to really be remembered and to look forward to every year.
Sitting down to a table like that with the linen and all the rest of it must have been quite a unique experience for these youngsters.
I think so, and I'm sure Father Dunn prepped them on how they should behave at that table. It wasn't, I think, as a normal dinner would have been. You can imagine a room filled with 150 or 200 boys and how difficult that must have been for Father Dunn to control with help, of course.
And this was just a once-a-year day. It only happened at Thanksgiving?
The feast was only once a year, but he was a benefactor
in other ways.
In other ways, helping pay for the building. He built a swimming pool and a chapel at the home. When Father Dunn had a special need, he would call on Hugh Campbell, and Hugh's checks bear that out.
Before we talk a little bit more about Mr. Campbell and a little bit more about him, what would the fate of these young boys have been had it not been for Father Dunn and his home?
That's probably a life of crime for many of them. You know, living on the streets, they would have been subject to being preyed upon by adults, wanting to use them. But being in the home gave them an opportunity to really make something of their life. Many of them became priests themselves. Many of them became bankers and doctors. Father Dunn reported very proudly that a few dozen of his boys died in World War I fighting in the trenches, and he was proud of their their service.
Any of them become locally prominent, whose names we might know?
That's a good question. Not that I know off the top of my head. I know one became the president of Mercantile Bank here in St. Louis in the 30s and 40s. So they played important roles for sure. And I think the longevity of this home lasting 100 years is a testament to the importance.
I've seen the home identified two ways. One is the old Newsboys home mm-hmm. and one is the Newsboys home, mm-hmm. which is correct.
I think just the Newsboys home, Father Dunn's Newsboys home. Yeah,
we get the old Newsboys, I think, from our Thanksgiving annual event
tradition, right?
On the streets. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Mr. Campbell. Obviously, he was well-to-do. Who was he, and how well-to-do was he?
Well, he was a old St. Louisan. He had been born in St. Louis about two decades before the start of the Civil War. He had a stellar education. He went to Smith Academy, which was a private boys' school, became Country Day School, and Washington University. He graduated in 1867. There were three members of his graduating class that year. It'll give you an idea of the size right. and nature of St. Louis at that time.
Small yearbook that year.
Yes, right? Very small. He inherited a fortune from his father at the death of his father in 1879. His father was the well-known entrepreneur and fur trader in early St. Louis, a contemporary of Henry Shaw. His father was Robert Campbell. And this fortune was sizable enough that Hugh really never had to work in his life. And he spent his youth, his 20s and 30s, traveling the world, seeing places as far afield as Egypt, keeping apartments in Paris and London, and coming back to St. Louis in the early 20th century and kind of settling down and in some ways being a very lonely man. He was unmarried, never mm-hmm. married or had children, and he and his bachelor brother lived in his parents' house for their entire lives, the Campbell House, of course, today. And so I think he was lonely, and I think this is one of the things that he did to fill his loneliness.
Do we know specifically what the attraction or the draw to the young? There are so many different ways that people, a person of means, could spend their money. Why these young men?
Well, I have a theory about that. Hugh was the oldest in his family of his brothers and sisters, and he had many young brothers and sisters who died in infancy. In fact, 10 of his brothers and sisters died as young children.
Not uncommon at that time.
Not uncommon at all. So I think that would have a profound effect on any young person growing up and watching all your little brothers and sisters be born and start to grow, but then to lose them. So I think that love of children can go back to be seen in his own family, his own brothers and sisters that he lost. It's well known that he bought lavish gifts for the children of his friends and supported neighborhood kids, kids who lived in his neighborhood with music lessons and food and candy at holidays. He had a drawer in his pantry, in the pantry at the Campbell House, big drawer, and it was filled with dimes. And the oral histories tell us that if you were a kid, you came to visit, he would invite you back to this room and open the drawer, and he would tell you, whatever you can get out in one handful is yours. And you can imagine in 1905, a handful of dimes would seem a vast fortune to a little child.
Do we have any idea how much money he would have spent on this whole operation over the years?
Well, I can tell you what he spent his candy bill was. As I said, Busy Bee Candy was a favorite provider of candy for these Thanksgiving dinners. But for Christmas, he would send candy and Easter to Father Dunn's home. And in a year when, in about 1906, when Father Dunn's opened, when chocolate was 25 cents a pound, he spent over $2,800 at Busy Bee Candy in 1 year. That's a lot of candy, and clearly he was giving it out all over, and I'm sure those Newsboys were the primary beneficiary of all that sweet.
When did his identity become officially known to all?
Not till his death. The first Thanksgiving, he died in August of 1931, and the first Thanksgiving after his death, Father Dunn revealed him as the Prince of Mystery or the Mysterious Benefactor, and you could tell in the quotes of the paper that Father Dunn lamented the loss, not only for the financial loss to the home, but it would appear that he and Hugh had become quite friendly. And I think maybe Father Dunn saw Hugh Campbell as a bit of a father figure himself.
So there was no annuity or anything like that to continue this process?
No, funny that you mentioned that, because one of the very first stories of these bountiful Thanksgiving dinners in about 1910, Father Dunn says, the benefactor says, I should ask for what I need now because I'm not in the will. he says, the benefactor has told me, ask for whatever you want and I'll probably give it to you. And Father Dunn did that. And as I said, he was provided for most of his needs of the home.
Did anyone else step to the plate to help these kids out over the years?
No one did. Of course, 1931 is smack in the middle of the Great Depression.
Sure.
And there were a few people who could afford a $1,000 dinner for a group of boys, and no one stepped up. And as I said, Father Dunn died not too many years after that.
I understand there's a story in the research that has been done to pull all this together.
There is. We always had heard of the story of Father Dunn at the museum through the history of giving tours, and many of the benefactors, the beneficiaries of the Campbells' generosity in the building had come back and said, Mr. Campbell was the benefactor to the old Father Dunn's home. So a few years ago, we really started to look into this in more detail, and the story that came about or came to light was really amazing. Every year, this event, this annual Thanksgiving, is covered in detail in the newspapers without fail, year after year. And so it's a really special special story that we can tell in a lot of detail.
And the Campbell House Museum, that building now, is his former residence. Is that correct?
The home that he grew up in. It's at the corner of 15th and Locust downtown. And this is the home that Father Dunn would have come and knocked on the door to make those special requests whenever he needed it. And it was Hugh Campbell's home until he died when he was 83 years old in 1931.
And what will those who have never visited the museum find there?
They will find a trip back to the Gilded Age, an age when no expense was spared on detail, on presentation. An age when St. Louis was growing at an unbelievable rate and where people like Robert Campbell were proud of their city and proud of their ability to flaunt their wealth. So they will see magnificent interiors and hear a pretty compelling story, not only about Hugh Campbell, but about his parents and his siblings.
And it's furnished, I assume, with those articles and artifacts with which he would have lived.
Exactly. Yeah. Shortly after his death, the house became a museum, and the contents of the house were purchased from his estate. And we've been welcoming people to really experience what life was like in the Gilded Age, to see it ever since.
We've only got about a minute left, and I have in my hands here a book that you were kind enough to bring called The Gilded Table, Recipes and Table History from the Campbell House. Tell our folks what it is and where they can get a copy. It's a wonderful, wonderful book.
It's a magnificent publication written by Suzanne Corbett, a well-known food historian, and they can find it at our website, campbellhousemuseum.org, or other places around town like the Missouri History Museum, a gift shop. But it's a story that centers around a cookbook manuscript that Virginia Campbell brought to St. Louis 175 years ago. A lot of food history and table history, what the etiquette was required, what kind of flatware you used, and what you ate, most importantly, and how it was served and how it was cooked.
Wonderful, wonderful colored pictures, too, which bring it all to life. And these recipes are all recipes of a bygone era.
That's true. Some things people won't want to try, like boiled buffalo tongue, but other things are absolutely spectacular. Lamb chops and fried chicken and delicious desserts. Something called Indian pudding, which I had never heard of, which is really spectacular.
Well, it's really hard to find a good buffalo these days.
True.
but when you do, there's a recipe in there for its tongue, I guess.
We'd be interested to hear from anyone who tries.
All righty. Well, Andy Hahn, I want to thank you so much from the Campbell House Museum. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Telling us this great story to represent this particular holiday season.
It's been my pleasure.
And the book, once again, is called The Gilded Table, Recipes and Table History from the Campbell House. Great talking to you.
Thank you
so
very much.
That's it for us for today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at StoryCorps' new app to facilitate recording family stories and great Thanksgiving, and the great Thanksgiving listen is what they call this this time. We'll also talk with psychologist Marva Robinson about effectively handling difficult conversations on polarizing topics at the Thanksgiving dinner table. And they do happen, don't they, folks? Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.